So, you want to be a contractor. Ever wonder what it takes to become a contractor? The journey they go on to get where they are now, or the crazy things they see and hear on the job site. Well, you're in the right spot. Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor, the podcast. Join your host, Mike Fisher, as he talks to owners of construction companies from all over about how they got started, how they run their business, and some of the craziest stories they've experienced on their job sites. And now, your host, Mike Fisher.
Welcome to So You Want to Be a Contractor. This is episode number 35. My name is Mike Fisher. With me as always over there.
And I am Marisela Arechiga. We are today talking to Mario Campirano with Express Electrical Services. He is the owner, the jefe, the head honcho, whatever you want to call him. He's the dude over on the east side of Los Angeles at Express Electrical Services. Mario, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me on here, Mike and Marisela. Pleasure always.
Yeah,
thank
welcome. You. I'm glad I gave you that intro. That was perfect. That was so much better than I could have done.
It came out sweet. Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Listen,
I put
Mike,
your name sometimes.
Yeah, you're going to need to start taking Spanish classes if we keep interviewing
people.
The sad
part is I worked for 15 years in a restaurant. I could probably speak pretty fluent Spanish. The problem is—
You probably could.
I just freeze sometimes and I get nervous.
Don't get nervous.
All right,
don't
Mike.
Get nervous. You only get better by practice. Mario, so— Tell us a little bit about who you are. Thank you, first of all, for joining our podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
We're excited to hear about your story. You look like a little bit of a veterana. Look, you've been around the block with construction. You have some stories to tell, so I'm excited to hear what your experiences have been. You are in electrical services. Are you commercial? Are you residential? Tell us what you do.
Well, I am strictly a residential service contractor now.
Okay.
So, you know, it's
now?
Now. So let me elaborate about what I mean now.
I was going to say, let's go back to the very beginning. How did you start in electrical? Did you start somewhere else?
I became an electrician back in 1995, working for a commercial service contractor. And, I can go deep into stories because I love telling stories, right? But I got into being a service contractor. Then I took a break from that and moved over to working for a residential service contractor. And I absolutely fell in love with that. And then when I founded the company and took off on my own many moonlights ago, I started doing what every other residential service contractor does, you know, advertising and getting service calls. But somewhere along that line, I actually lost my path and I became a very large electrical construction contractor, right? So what does that mean? Well, that means I got into doing tilt-up buildings, doing, you know, roping in homes for these big old, you know, investors that build community homes. I don't want to mention the name on here. And, you know, I used to get contracts to rope in, you know, like three communities, and I had a bunch of people, right? So.
And was that just because the money was there and it looked good? And
well, I mean, tell me what contractor doesn't get attracted by a contract, right? I think a lot of contractors, one of their biggest mistakes is they actually look at a contract, they look at the numbers, they don't pay attention to what's actually being said on the contract, and they sign an agreement based on how many digits they actually see. You know how many contractors I've seen make that mistake?
Yeah.
There was one lesson that was taught in the construction industry. And for everybody listening down here, it takes one sentence to make you or break you on
any contract,
on the electrical, on any kind of notes that are in the plans of a construction. Mm. Believe me, I learned that the hard way. Mm. It takes one sentence to make you or break you. For example, I can say electrical contractor to provide all light fixtures. And the next you know, you're waiting for the light fixtures to arrive and you're asking the GC, hey, where are the light fixtures? Like, dude, you should have read the notes. You're supposed to provide them. Yes. You're going to be upside down on that job. And I'm telling you this because I was building I don't know if I can say this, but I was building a Panera Bread and that got me. That was like my 14th Panera Bread, but I was on a different contractor at that point. Mm-hmm. And he got me on the lights and I lost on that job. Taught me a lesson though. And taught me a lesson to read the notes actually 2, 3, 4 times, make sure I wasn't missing anything. Uh-huh. Right.
Uh-huh.
So You know, I had a smile when I says, "Hi, you know, so you want to be a contractor?" And I'm like, man, you know, I gotta love it, right? I love contracting, right? I love what I do. Matter of fact, I'm building a custom home right now for my family.
Oh,
you know, I lost my head last week. I actually had to fire the contractor last week, and it was unfortunate. You know, the communication behind a contractor sometimes could be difficult, but it's his own fault.
Yeah.
Because we have cell phones to the tip of our hands, emails, text messaging, and a lot of these contractors fail at communication, right?
Oh, wait, Mario, you're going all the way down the rabbit. I can pick out like five different like sub conversations. Yeah. I'm like, I need to stop right here because we're going to get all the way into client relations and how contractors win and how they fail and communication. But I'm still with my eyes are wide open hearing about your origin story. So mm-hmm. you see these beautiful numbers coming in a contract. You started at residential, but the contracts were attractive. You know, it takes a little bit to understand. It's not about the number. It's about the margin, right?
It's not about the number. It's about the margin. You know, it's what's left over when the smoke clears. You know, once the smoke clears, I can tell you stories that, you know, I signed contracts based off emotions. You know, I was being awarded contracts. You know, after negotiations, you know, drop the price. I was excited, you know, signing these huge $200,000-$400,000 contracts, you know, and by the time you're at the middle of the project, you're pulling your hair out, right? I mean, that back then I had more hair, right? So
was it like long and wavy or like, oh, like,
it was just enough to comb the hair, but you know, you're pulling your hair out because you already know that by halfway of the job, you're disappointed. Your crew's not acting as fast as you want them to act, you know, and then you start thinking to yourself, am I going to lose on this job? And, you know, unfortunate, there is times you make money and there's times you lose money or there's times that you break even.
Right.
And it's a shame because, you know, the education that a contractor should get is just the education to make sure that his margins are going to be correct and make sure he can be.
Right. How long did it take you, Mario, to figure out like that the contract is really in the margin? And did you start managing that way or was it just because what I'm hearing from you is that you did commercial for how many years did you do more commercial work?
So I ran commercial from 2003 all the way up to 2010.
So you did it for a while.
Yeah, I did it for a while. Then in 2007, when the recession hit in 2007, 2008. We actually grew because I became 8-8 certified for the federal government. So I started doing nothing but pavilion wage work and, doing, you know, big jobs inside all the military bases.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to you answering your question, how long did it take me? Years, you know, because I was out in the field.
Yeah.
I was out in the field. I was working in the business, not on the business. You know, I was putting on the tool belt. You know, I was going out there showing the guys that I could still do it.
I was working in the business, not on the business. Underscore. Let me pause real quick. I was working in the business, not on the business. Keep going.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So, you know, when you're working in the business, you're just a damn employee. You know, you're just a... And then if you calculate how many hours you actually put in based on how much you're making, you're probably making less than minimum wage. And it's a shame, you know,
no doubt.
I feel like you're talking about my life. Yeah. Oh, my God.
But, you know, it took me years to understand the numbers and figuring out how am I losing money when I'm working all these long hours. You know, I have two grown children. I have four kids, four beautiful kids and a wife and three dogs right now. Obviously,
full
the dogs weren't in the picture.
That's
back
a full
then,
house.
But, I got two grown kids. I got a 26-year-old and a 23-year-old. And I really didn't get to enjoy seeing them growing up because I was tippy-toeing out of the house and tippy-toeing back in the house.
Lord.
Right. So I would get to see them on the weekend, if that, on a Sunday.
If you're lucky. Yeah.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
And it all breaks down to not knowing how to budget yourself, you know, how to read your plans, how to do the margins. And it's a damn shame, but it made me who I am today. Right?
So I want to go to that point where you said no more commercial, strictly residential. What was that? What was what was the impetus for that decision process, right? It sounds like it could have been a few things, the family, the loss on a job, the stress of it, whatever, you know what it is. But was there one thing specifically? Was it a number of things? What was that decision-making process like in that period of time?
Yeah.
It was getting picked up. It was getting picked up by the ambulance on the 710 freeway here.
Well, shit, that's a little bit more dramatic than I expected.
You went health. Right.
So,
okay, go.
No, I received a letter in the mail on a Monday that I was being written off on a bankruptcy for $289,000 or $285,000, right? So I always say $300,000. I was getting written off by a general contractor, Bobby Holcomb. Hope you're listening to this. But
What's up, Bobby? You want to come on?
Bobby.
Where are you at?
And we had gone out to dinner that Friday with the wife and kids. And
wait, you Monday, were that close with him? You guys went. He wasn't just a general contractor.
We did a lot of tilt-up buildings. We did a lot of commercial work.
I'm sad for the way this is going to go. Okay.
We were just talking about trying to make this a 50-minute podcast. I feel like we're going to be here for a minute. But okay, yes. You're with Bobby.
You know, you get this letter from the damn superior courts and bankruptcy courts, and you're like, hey, you open it up, and I'm like being first exposed to this, and I'm trying to read this shit, and I'm like, what the hell is this? And, you know, he's writing me off, and I'm like, what the hell's going
on?
What
does writing you off mean for those of us?
He was pretty much telling me that he can't afford to pay my invoice.
Yeah, he's filing bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy court is writing off his debt.
Yeah.
So right? What are you supposed to do with that then?
Well, you find it, of course. You know, that's just a heads up saying, hey, don't contact this person. We know he owes you money, but we're going to go through the whole logistics of the bankruptcy court to see, you know, if he's going to be able to pay you something or you're just going to be wiped out. Right.
And you've already paid all your bills, though. Like you've already paid against. And that he was contract.
going for Chapter 13, which is a complete wipeout. Right. Yep. If it's Chapter 11, you know, Chapter 11 now is different because that's a reorganization. I purchased a couple of companies under Chapter 11. And that's another story when buying companies out of bankruptcy. Anyhow, you know, he was writing me off and I'm calling him and calling him. And then he answered finally. And I said, hey, Bobby, what the hell is this letter I just got? And he goes, oh, man, you know what? Don't take it personal, man. We got a good relationship. It's just business. You know, so, you know, he owned multiple businesses. He wasn't dumb. And so I got on my truck and I shot out to one of the jobs. I had about 20 guys working on one of his jobs and shot out over there. And I couldn't make it to the job. You know, I was hyperventilating and I was like, oh, my God, this is untrue. Right. Pulled over off the set where the 710 and the 105 meet out here in Los Angeles. And I remember pulling off next to Rosecrans Boulevard, but still on the freeway, called 911, told me I can't breathe. And, you know, took me to the hospital, panic attack, told me to stress out, chill out. So, you know, there's a contracting state law out here that says that if you're committed to a contract, you got to finish the contract. You can't abandon the job.
Lord.
Oh, yeah, but that bond's only for $15,000.
Yeah, the bond's only for $15,000. You know, you can issue a stop notice. I mean, I still remember all this damn language, which I hate.
Mike, I see your insurance dropping knowledge there.
Well, I mean, that's a CSLB bond. I mean, right? I mean, but it's a performance bond. But again, I feel like, and I mean, this is a perfect example. For years, I mean, that bond has been $15,000 forever, right? Mm-hmm. And with the costs of, I mean. Shit, how many times has California raised the minimum wage in the last 10 years?
49?
Right? I mean, between minimum wage, the cost of materials and everything else, right? Like that bond is, what kind of job can be done for $15,000 when it comes to construction?
None.
I know very, 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 very None. Few. So all it's doing is hosing guys like you, right? Putting that situation where like, oh yeah, sure. Here's a $15,000 from this bond company, but what the fuck's that going to do on a $300,000 job?
So Mario, are you telling us that you had to finish?
No, we issued a stop notice. The attorneys got involved. We did have to finish it because now the owners of that particular building got involved. The exit, the contractor out, we finished it. We were committed. I was already in debt. And then I already had like two other contracts signed that I had to commit to finishing. And I committed to finishing those contracts. But in between all that, I went home and, you know, I'm pacing back and forth and I'm like, how in the fuck am I going to tell my wife this? Right. Like we just got screwed. Mm-hmm. I was pacing back and forth. And
that's the worst part too, right? It wasn't even your fault, but it's still something that you're like, how do I explain this?
Yeah.
How do you explain that I just fucked everything up? Sorry for cussing, but I that's just me naturally.
We're listed explicit. It's so, okay.
You know what I did? What did I do? You know, I didn't give up. You know, I said, there's got to be a way out of this shit. I went to my suppliers the next morning. I spoke to them, showed them the bankruptcy letter. I said, man, if you give me 18 months, I'll pay you. You know, I owed one supplier like 60 grand. The other one, maybe 70 grand. I said, give me 18 months and I'll pay you guys. Right. And I said, if you believe in me, if not, I'm going to have to file. And then you don't get your money anyway.
Yeah.
Shit. Yeah. So they allowed me. And I told my wife, you know what? We're going back into doing service. I'm going to jump on a truck and I'm going to start running service calls like we used to.
I need to underscore their relationship. So for anyone listening, if you're pulling out a nugget, it's having a relationship with your vendors.
It's always having there. Make sure you're not late with your vendors. You know, when we used to be heavy in construction and, you know, I was always on time with my vendors. My vendors were taking me out to eat. I was taking them out to eat. I got to know their families because I would invite them over to barbecues, and it was, you know, it was just great, right? And if it was just, if it was a big vendor, at least you can take the manager out to eat, and you have that relationship that they can actually speak up for you, right? So when shit hits the fan, right?
Yeah.
One of the things in construction, and I'm sure this, you know, for people listening, they'll understand that one thing in construction is we end up carrying the note.
Yeah.
We end up playing the bank.
Right.
For some of these general contractors. And then you got to go knocking on their door so they can actually pay you. Right. So be careful on how much, ARs you're carrying, because that can actually be heavy too. Right. Yeah. So that can be heavy on your heart when you carry too many ARs. You know, we got to the point where we were carrying, you know, 300,000-400,000 in ARs, you know, just depending that money's going to flow in. Right. So again, you know, it's the relationship, building the relationship, and we can get deeper into that, you know, how to build the relationship. And that's pretty much simple. Just be yourself and be on time and be honest.
Yeah.
But, you know.
So you get on a truck. After this goes down, you go talk to your vendors. You ask them to give you some grace, give me some time. You make those agreements. Then you hop on a truck and you tell your wife, we're going back to service. We're going back to residential.
We're going back to doing residential service. I said, that's, you know, I'm good at what I do. And I took off like a rocket. What I did is I grabbed some guys that were working with me. And I said, this is what's going to happen. You know, we laid out the whole plan. And I said, I got three trucks. I need two guys per truck. And I need you guys to follow me. And every morning we would take off and I'd have three trucks follow me. I'd walk in, make a sale. I leave two guys there, go to the next call, leave two guys there, go to the next call, leave two guys there. Right. So my conversion rate out in the field when I used to be a service tech is I can do 90% conversion rate. That means out of 10 calls, I can close 9 people. Mm. Right. So and fast forward to today, I'm one of the largest electrical service contractors here in the LA market.
Oof.
And very proud of saying that. Right. So we're one of the largest ones with 32 service trucks out on the road every single day.
32, wow.
32 trucks.
And just electrical service and repair for residential homeowners. Now, don't get distracted, because I know that this is for contracting, but I'm in service. We don't do construction. We don't do remodels. We don't work with We don't work with property managers. We are strictly just working with homeowners that call us in for a service call.
Okay. Pause. So your experience, as turbulent as they were, really helped you see the trees through the wood. You got real clear on what your mission was. You got real clear on what you were good at. And I hope everyone is listening to that part. You got real good at what you were good at. And followed that. You were good at with people. You were good at conversions. You belonged in the residential industry, not with GCs, not with HOAs, but like servicing the repairs for residential consumers, right? how did you get good at making sure you had enough volume to service the three trucks, then the five trucks, then the 10? What does that volume look like? What does your marketing look like to keep you good at what you're good at?
You know, that's a very good question. You know, when people ask me, what do I do here in the business? You know, when people tell me like, hey, what do you do here in the business? I said, I'm a marketing guru.
Okay.
That's my job here, right? My job is, listen, I have a back door here in my office. People don't know when I'm in here. Literally, you know, when I open up the front door and walk out the hallway, like, oh, hey, boss, how's it going? Or, you know, we have a great culture here. You know, there's always music playing in the hallways and I'll start rapping against somebody. It's just crazy. But marketing is very important, right? To know your marketing, you know.
Where have you been all my life?
I mean, culture is such a key thing here.
It is.
I mean, it's everything, you know, culture is everything in your organization, you know, but going back to how did I keep three trucks busy? Boy, man, these stories come back really, really quick. You know, you start going into Home Depot, start leaving business cards inside light fixtures, inside panels.
Talk about guerrilla marketing.
You know, you start leaving business cards, you start leaving flyers inside the light fixtures, inside the panels, you know, you stand outside the Home Depot in a truck, you start passing them out, you know, you start knocking on doors and the neighbors' doors, you start telling them and say, hey, you know what, I just finished a job in your community, we're doing a free electrical panel inspection.
You're talking all guerrilla marketing, Mario. Yeah. You're talking marketing.
That's a marketing.
Hold on. I'm not saying that's the only thing that you were doing, but that is incredibly impressive that was where you were spending a lot of your energy. You were putting your business cards and flyers and light fixtures at Home Depot. You were going door to door and saying, hey, I just finished your neighbors. Do you need help? That's like, who's doing that?
P.S. Home Depot, he's not doing that anymore, and the statute of limitations is expired. So
right. That's you know, all I did in 2010 to go back is what I did in 2000 when I took off on my own. When I actually ventured off on my own, that's what I would do. I would go inside Home Depot, look at the aisles, who was buying electrical, start asking questions, putting in business cards. So all I did was I just repeated what I already knew back in 2010.
Yeah. Right?
So, but what I did do different in 2010 is when, you know, telemarketing was still, you know, quote unquote legal, right? It's still legal now, but you got to go through all the loopholes.
Right.
Started calling, you know, a bunch of unfamiliar people, I would say, people that would just bought their homes. We would find out the MLS list, go out and drop flyers in the list, go doing mail outs, calling people. And that was me, the one on the phone. You know, that was me. Like,
I was just going to ask you, were you scaling this in a way that it was you and a team? Was it a team or was it like Mario on the phone being like, hey,
that was me. That was me. Because remember, I had to get out of this debt. So it was urgent for me to get out of this debt. So that was me, you know, working, you know, 15, 16 hour days. I started finding out what was the best time to call my clients or the prospects, you know, when I was hungry. I started finding out that the hours between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. was the best time to get a hold of a homeowner. You know, and how do you actually break the ice with the homeowner when you're doing an outbound call is just crazy, because I still remember all those scripts. I'd be like, hey, Chad, how's it going? Good afternoon. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm just telling you that I'm in your neighborhood and one of your neighbors gave me your phone number. It was bullshit. You know, I got their name. I got their name off of the white list. So it was just, I wouldn't even mention a company name. You know, the electrician down the street did somewhere for your neighbor. What name you gave me my number? I can't remember, Miss Betty or somebody. Yeah. You know,
Susie from down the street.
You know what's funny? I do the same shit every day. Yeah.
But I love it. You gotta understand, Mike. We live in the best country of the fucking world. I don't give a shit what anybody has to say. I'm not gonna talk politics on here, but we live in the best country in the world where dreams come true and you can actually do what you want to do and set your mind to do it, and you have to have the necessity behind you want to do it.
Yeah.
You know, the shit ain't going to come to your laps. It doesn't work. You got to hustle shit, right? So, you know, fast forward to today, you know, we have 32 service trucks out in the road, but those are what we call selling trucks, right? And then we got an additional amount of trucks on the road that are our apprentices, right? That got to go help our master electricians, because here in the state of California, we got to make sure our electricians are state certified, which a lot of people don't follow that law. But you know, because we have such big exposure, we got to make sure we follow that
law. Yeah.
Right. So
going back to, I want to go back to when you said you started in 2010, you said, hey, three trucks, you guys follow me. I'm going to close, leave one, close, leave one, close, leave one.
Yeah.
Was that a process that was done out of necessity because you knew you could close them, or were you teaching them how to close? Was that a training process or a, where we're closing out of necessity? I'm here at a necessity process. And how long did it take to get to the point where you didn't have to go on those calls anymore?
Are you still doing that? Can I ask that? Like, are you still selling, or do you have a sales team? Did you scale it?
No, I don't go out in the field anymore. I stopped going out in the field in 2013.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And actually we still have the truck I used to drive in 2013. I think I have an emotional attachment to it, right?
That's so awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Just getting auto tags so you don't have to pay insurance on it.
Yeah. Mike, to answer your question, it was out of being fucking desperate. Desperate. Desperate to get out of debt.
Yep.
Panic mode kicked in. You know, fuck the defeat. I ain't gonna fucking lose. All I know how to do is win. Right. So it was out of necessity. Did I teach anybody out of those street trucks? No, not a single damn person, because I couldn't afford for them not to close. Right. Mm-hmm. I didn't want them inside the house.
Cool.
You know, if you have two guys walking into a front door today, there's going to be intimidation by the homeowner right away, saying, fuck, why is there two guys walking to my door? This shit's going to be expensive, right? So it would just be myself, and I'd have the truck parked around the corner, and then I start working, and I'll be like, Miss Betty, I'm going to go ahead. I have somebody here in the community that just finished the job. They're going to pull up, and they're going to help me here finish this job. And then they would pull up. They start, and I'd be like, Miss Betty, I got to run to another call, but these gentlemen will take care of you. And then I just move on and keep going, right? So, and it wasn't until 2000.
Are you a first-generation entrepreneur? Like, do you come from?
I'm a first-generation entrepreneur in the family. I'm the first-generation Mexican-American in my family. Somos de Jalisco.
Me, man. Your grit in, like, and the energy that you have, that had to, like, come from somewhere. And that's why I'm asking, like, you had to have seen that from somewhere, because it's so, I mean, I haven't been talking to a lot of people, but it's so infectious and it's so palpable. Like, you're not going to lose and you're going to find a way. So I just wonder, like, where does that come from?
You know,
for those listening on audio, he's got a very wry smile.
It comes from
right now.
Being fucking broke, right? Where does it come from? What did you say, Mike? What was that, Mike?
I said, for those listening on audio only right now, he's got a very wry smile. Something's about to come.
And it did.
You know, it comes from being broke. It comes from, listen, I don't know if some of you guys already heard my podcast, and I don't like to talk about too much about it, but it comes from, you know, being grown up in the hood, being broke, you know, being incarcerated. As I don't know, Maricela, have you heard some of my other podcasts? You know, we had a rough childhood being raised. You know, I'm grateful. My father, rest in peace, you know, always gave us a roof over our head and food. We just never could see eye to eye. You know, we grew up in a very gang infested area, and, you know, I got involved in that stupidity. You know, I'm a product of the environment that I was raised in.
Word.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I guess that taught me a lesson in my early life. Right. Because, you know, being addicted to drugs, we have a drug program here in the organization. Because
in your organization?
Right now, right here, we have a drug rehab program in place. We have an alcohol program in place. We've already sent a few of our technicians to drug rehabilitation. I believe in second opportunities, because I was given a second opportunity at life. So, you know, throughout my childhood life, you know, being raised and being involved in gangs, being involved in drugs, then being incarcerated, you know, I think that opened up my eyes to hustling, to always wanting more, because when I got out of being incarcerated and I didn't want to go back to that lifestyle, I said, well, I need to learn how to hustle the legal way and not the illegal way, right? When you ask me, you know, where does this energy come from? And it just naturally comes from from being exposed to a lot of do's and don'ts and by the grace of God, right? Because I'm a big believer in God and I ask him to give me strength to continue and lead my people to success, right? So my job here is to make sure that I can make every single one of my team members a house owner, right? Own new houses, own new
in
cars.
Los Angeles, people. We're not talking a home owner in Montana. Yeah. I love Montana. Right. Long live Montana. But you're trying to make a homeowner out of every one of your employees in Los Angeles.
That's one of my goals. Yeah. One of my goals. Me and my wife, what we actually like to do now is we like to give back to our community, you know, part-time philanthropist, try to give back to as much as we can in our community. We're very humble people. We don't go, you know, showing shit off. That's just not us. That's not who we are, right?
Yeah.
But again, going back to the energy where it comes from just the necessity, you know, wanting to make sure that I can give back more to my people, making sure that I can continue to have a great culture within the organization, right? I think that's so important and we can go deep into that. I think without culture, you're nothing.
You're nothing.
I don't care how much money you're bringing in. You're just without culture, it's nothing.
Yeah, I think one of the things that a constant theme that I've been hearing in other contractors is that we forget as small business owners, we still have the responsibility of creating culture. Even though we may be, you know, a 10 under employees or five of us, like we still have a responsibility as leaders of our organizations to create that culture, the ethos. What is the pulse of this business? Is it just money? Because if it's just that, let's talk about that. Let that be the bottom line. Is it service? Is that we want to be the best service-oriented, you know, electricians in our community? Like, whatever it is, culture is important. And we miss the mark, I should say, small businesses in general and EMAS, us as contractors in the industry, we just forget that. It's just, oh, we go, that we miss a really big opportunity to create and harvest culture. So I love that you're talking about
and focus
that.
On your people, right?
About that go, yeah. Right? It's always about making sure that you're the first one there. Go. But it's so important. You know that the average contractor, statistically proven, the average contractor today manages their business based on how much money they have in their checking account?
Yeah.
Well, no doubt.
No doubt.
Fucking insane. Why don't you manage it based off your P&L? Why don't you manage it based off your balance sheet? Why don't you manage it?
Because that would take actual data reporting, time, analytics.
Like, yeah, investment. It would take investment.
Yeah.
It would take investment. And that investment doesn't come unless they're thinking about margin. Like, honestly, if you're just looking at a $300,000 contract, but it's going to take $340,000 to build, you're losing. You're losing. Yeah. So it takes the money and the investment to have people in place to get QuickBooks, whatever the software is, so that you're looking at your P&Ls and you're seeing what your margins are.
Yeah, I think that's so important right now. You know, how did I learn how to read P&Ls and all that? When I used to go to my CPA and say, teach me this. I'm paying you for a service. I need you to now to teach me how to read a P&L. Teach me where I'm losing money. Teach me where my balance sheet with my, you know, my liabilities and my assets are. Teach me how to cash flow manage. You know, teach me how to forecast. And obviously the forecasting is a little bit different.
It is.
Now, you know, now we do audited financials. You know, we're doing audited financials at a higher level.
I think that's important to point out, right? I mean, everybody says surround yourself with people that are smarter than you or you know what you're good at and you know, find people that are good at some of those things that you're not good at, right? So it's very easy to kind of follow that lead and yeah, I need an attorney. I need an insurance guy. I need a CPA, right? But are you asking those people questions? Like you said, are you learning from those people so that you understand? Or are you simply just paying them to do a job where that you don't care about, right? I imagine you didn't want to learn a P&L so that you don't ever have to hire a CPA again, right? That wasn't the point.
The point was
to be able to understand your business better, right?
Right.
You're still going to use a CPA. You're still going to hire that person to do that job, but there comes a point where you need to understand what that kind of stuff is too, right? I mean, I see it every day in my industry. I do the insurance side, right? And it blows my mind how often, I mean, not to put you on the spot, Maricela, but you and I had a conversation about insurance 6 months ago, 8 months ago with your liability policy, right? Like, and that was something that, and that's what I enjoy about it, right? I get to teach. And I know that she's not going to go and place her own insurance because now she knows this. She's still going to come to me. But at the end of the day, it's information now that she has that she didn't understand about her business before. It's just
exactly right.
Like you said, kind of diving in and getting deeper and understanding.
Exactly right.
Knowing your policy is so important, right? There's so many exclusions in the damn policy. You know, I had to sit down with two insurance brokers and say, hey, bro, read me what this says and dumb it down for me.
I was going to say, yeah, you don't want them to read it to you because you're not going to understand a single word.
Yeah.
Then I took it to another broker and I said, dumb this down for me.
Yes.
Because I wanted to get two different opinions to make sure I wasn't getting screwed, right? So general liability insurance is...
What was amazing that you just said, what you said about that, Mario, is that Mike said, I'm going to dumb this all the way down for you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're basically not going to get covered. Maybe I should have signed that.
Right. So again, when I was being taught all this, it's not because I wanted to be a CPA.
Right.
It's because I wanted to make sure I understood it when I was presented with the P&L. And I wanted to make sure that I understood it based on the necessity, right? Where am I losing money? How am I losing money? Where am I bleeding? Where am I not bleeding? You know that there's contractors today that don't get their P&L for like 6 months. And I'm like, how the fuck? Like, how do you know you're not losing money?
Yeah.
You know, it's so important for me to make sure that we have a P&L already ready and our balance sheet is ready.
Hold on, Mario, how were you doing that day one? Were you doing that year five? When did P&Ls become the pull for you? When did you learn that?
It became the pulse for us in 2007, right at the beginning of the recession, because we got 8-8 certified and we had to make sure all our financials were in order. Now I'm like, I don't need to know this shit. Like, what the hell do I want to know it? And then, you know, when the government started asking for financials and this and that, and I'm like, okay, this is interesting. Oh, so this is my gross profit. What the hell is my gross profit? Oh, before labor, you know, labor and material, that after you take that out, I have a gross profit. And then, oh shit, I see my expenses under that. Oh, that's my net profit. Shit, oh, I gotta pay taxes on that shit, right? You know, you start learning from that,
just,
right?
I'm just gonna point out, so it took you about 7 to 8 years to get plugged into your P&Ls, right?
Right, you know, it did. It took me some time to get plugged in. I had nobody around me to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, it's unfortunate, but let me skip what I was about to say. I would just say that there is contractors out there that will not help each other. And I think it's bullshit.
It's garbage.
We live in the best country in the world where there's enough work for everybody. I belong to three different organizations right now. That's best practice organizations. And it's great. Like, I leave to Austin tonight, right? I got a big conference I got to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great when you can be surrounded by contractors that are willing to share information on what they've learned, the mistakes that they've done.
Yes.
But it's unfortunate that you still see it today where some of these contractors believe that if they give their secret sauce out, that somebody else is going to take it. There's no fucking secret sauce.
There isn't. Sell your ass off and give good service. Sell your ass off, give good service.
In my opinion, if you're hiding something, it's because you're scared of the competition because you don't think you're doing a good enough job. You're not treating people the right way.
The only competition that you should have is your fucking self.
Nobody else.
Look at yourself in the damn mirror, right? And make sure that you can push for success, because success ain't going to come easy, right? It's how you answer your phone. It's how you give, how you greet people, how you talk to people, how you give them that energy, how you give them that love. Listen, love on your customer, love on another human being, and you're going to get such a return on that investment of loving other people that you're going to be amazed with yourself. You're going to be like, holy shit, you know what? I'm changing my attitude. A lot of contractors have bad attitudes too as well, right? And it's not because they want to have a bad attitude. It's because shit's not going their way and they're losing money. And then next thing you know, it just becomes a really bad day for them, right? So, you know, my hat's off to them. You know, bad day can just mean somebody didn't show up to work and now they got to man it, or you know, it's just shit, man. Don't take me back down to that rabbit hole, man.
Mario, let's talk about
my job right now, right?
Mario fired up, Mike.
I love it, right?
I am so with it. We've talked a lot about your reasons of why you're in the industry that you're in the niche that you're in. We've talked a lot about sales. You are a salesperson and entrepreneur at heart. Like, you can feel that energy. But let's talk about client relations. You started to get into it a little bit because of your experience that you're having on your own with your own contractor, why you're fired, why you've had to fire him. But let's start with the numbers first. If you have 30 plus trucks, how many clients are you serving in a year?
You know, that's another good question. And I wouldn't probably be able to answer that off the top of my head. I don't look at those numbers. I just look at making sure that we hit our sales goal and everything. Last year, I know that we serviced a little bit over 14,000 customers.
Oh, my Jeez. God.
Right. So again, you know, a little bit over 14,000 customers this year. This year, we are growing right now. We're pacing right now to grow compared to last year by $2 million. So.
Okay. That's 14,000 homeowners. That's 14,000 personalities. That's 14,000 requirements. That's 14,000 to-dos. Mm-hmm. What are you doing? How are you doing it to manage these 14,000 personalities so that they become raving fans of you, so they come back, so that Betty really does tell her neighbor Sue that you got to call Mario for your stuff? Like, what does your client management look like?
Right. So, you know, we have training is a big part of our organization, right? Make sure we know how to communicate. So let me back up here for a bit because I don't want to get nobody confused. We visited 14,000 homes. Out of 14,000 homes, we only closed about 70% of those deals, right? So
still a big number.
It's only 10,000. Never
it's
mind.
A
I'm not
big
interested
freaking
anymore.
Number.
Right. So, I'm not interested.
So let's say
anymore.
We're at 10,000. So let's say we close.
There's no lesson to be learned.
Let's say we close 10,000 customers to do some repairs or new installations in their home. It all starts here in the office, right? It all starts with the culture, starts with the training behind it. What comes behind the training is how to handle people's personalities. Don't, you know, teaching them how to do a presentation, teaching them. Now get this, right? Because I know everybody comes at me with it when I do these and says, well, you're teaching your people how to do fucking sales. And I'm like, listen, you can go to the doctors and the doctor can say, hey, buddy, either you lose weight or you're going to die. Or he's going to tell you a different way and say, hey, bro, you time to lose some weight, man. I don't need you to go to another world, right? Let me elaborate why I'm saying that. Because people can take it that I'm training people how to be salesmen, but I'm teaching them how to be a great fucking communicator and the best service technician they had in their home, period.
And just a good human being.
But why is that bad? At what point do we not need sales in our industry? I'm confused by, like, everything.
Yeah, why do people think
sale?
That's bad?
Why is that a negative thing?
No, listen, I will tell you, you know how many conversations that I've had with contractors say, oh, you're in service contracting. You must always rip off the customers. You guys are in sales. You guys sell customers what they don't need. And I'm like, okay, so you're telling me that if you go to a quick stop oil change place and they're telling you that you need to flush out your brake fluid and you need to change out your tires and your shocks, are they actually giving you a heads up or they're trying to sell you some shit? There's different ways you can look at it. And let's say you drive away from changing your oil and next, you know, you get a flat down the road, your tire pops. Are you going to go back and complain to the oil guy? Or are you going to say, fuck, I shouldn't listen to the oil guy because he told me I need to put the tires. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
So our job here at Express is to make sure that we can teach our clients what we see in their home and what needs to be done. We create options. We do a menu pricing and we say, Mrs. Betty, this is what we found. You don't have to do it, but I want to be transparent that this is what we found and we can still take care of just the repair what you called us out here for today. Mm-hmm. What do you want us to do? We leave it up to Mrs. Betty, right? So, but it's all about communication, right? Because if you don't have that communication, now, if I was a contractor today, I would pesterize the customer. What do I mean by that? I would call the customer as many times to keep them in communication to make sure that they understand at what level of the job I am, right? Where is it going right and where is it going wrong? Because there's no construction job that goes right.
Never.
Right. So I just fired my contractor. And if he would have kept me in communication and would have told me this is what's going wrong and not try to sugarcoat it or hide it from me, then things would have gone smooth because I would have understood because I'm a contractor. I would have said, okay, it's unforeseen. You would have known, right? But if it's something that you're trying to hide from me, now you're trying to invoice me a different way, I'm going to catch your ass, right?
Yeah.
So, but, you know, for you contractors that are out there, communication is such big, especially now with text messaging being so you know, the number one thing that people read within, you know, 5 minutes versus emails, phone call. People, I mean, really, who's picking up their phones these days, right? People just send you the voice.
Unfortunately, not enough people.
No one. Yeah, Mike should know.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trust no, me. But let's, but here and here, I completely agree with what you're talking about, Mario.
I mean, we're everywhere in this conversation, right? So sorry for the dialogue. It's going
no, it's
everywhere.
Purpose.
I love it.
That's why they work out great.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I think where we do fail in our industry is in our communication skills. And that has something to do with culture, right? Like when the leaders of the organization from, it doesn't come from top down. It's not going to funnel through to the homeowners. And it is very simple to communicate effectively, even if you're not used to, you know, emails, if it is a text message, although I wouldn't encourage text messages, but like when you're on a big project and you're building someone a custom home like Mario, what is so hard about having somebody send out a weekly report that tells Mario, this is what I did this week. This is what I'm doing next week. This is what's going on in the project that we need to talk about. Instead of just sending Mario an invoice for, you know, an additional $4,000 that he then starts to question my integrity.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. What are we doing as an industry to improve our communication skills? Because it's such a basic skill. It's such a basic skill.
I even helped out the contractor and I said, hey, listen, I'm going to do you a favor. I created a Google Drive folder, named it my address. And I said, and we're going to create a minutes page. And in that minutes page, when you invite me, or there's something in there, we can write it up in there. And that way I can get notified like, hey, shit hit the fan. We need to walk this job again. Or when I tell you something like, hey, my wife changed plans, you know, changed her mind number 73, right? I think we're at change 31 right now.
Ooh.
Right. So. But I'm doing all the trades. I'm doing all the electrical, the plumbing, and the HVAC. They're all, you know, the electrical is my electrician, the plumbers and HVAC, they're my buddies. But thank God it was structural changes were made too. But, you know, I created a minutes page, right, for communication, because communication is key. Tell me why he never opened it. Tell me why he never even bothered to use it, right? Mm-hmm. So
it's, stubbornness. It's that's why.
But also, you know, for the contractors that are deep in construction and listening to this, what is your key person that you're leaving on the job? Because we have to understand this. Contractors normally just don't stay on one job. They bounce from job to job. If they're large enough, they have superintendents on the job. If they're not large enough, they leave somebody just in charge and just say, you're in charge. What is that person gaining? Listen to me. What is that person gaining to manage your job? What is the incentive behind that person actually representing your company name to make sure that he can actually complete that job? Where's the incentive?
Right.
A lot of contractors fail on the incentive part. They're like, hey, listen, you're in charge of this job. I'm going to check out Mrs. Smith's job now, and I want you to stay at Mrs. Betty's job. Well, if the guy sees no incentive but an hourly pay, but he has no incentive behind an extra dollar on why he should take care of that job, tell me why he should take care of it.
Right.
Because he has a job. Listen, the labor shortage is fucked up right now.
Right.
Right. The people are bouncing around. They're looking for a house where they can, the culture is great, where, you know, give me something in return. Give me something valuable back in return. Is it money? For some people, it ain't money. I'll tell you that shit right now. For some people, it's the PTO, the paid time off. For some people, it's the benefits. For some people, it's just the culture around. So money is not everything for some of these people that want to come work. It just has to do with, hey, what is the incentive? Why am I going to give Mike Fisher, what am I going to give him to actually represent me to finish this job for me? Right?
What are some of the things you do for your guys?
How do you solve that problem?
You can come up with an incentive, right? You can say, hey, listen, you know, you start thinking outside the box and you say, okay, if I'm going to leave Mike on this job and he's going to man this job 90% of it, and I'm going to tell Mike, if you finish this job on time, and you make sure that this is completed, Mike, I'm going to bonus you $1,000, Mike. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bonus you $2,000. I'm going to bonus you $3,000. Or say, Mike, if you finish this job here, Mike, I'm going to bonus you $1,000 plus some tickets to Disneyland for you and your family. Right? Now Mike has something to look forward to on completing that job, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, Mike, if there's a percentage behind it, right? Hey, Mike, I'm going to give you 0.5% of this job. right? Now Mike has skin in the game. Why should I finish it, right? Because I got more revenue coming down, right? But this also has to do with learning your margins, learning to budget, learning. Listen, I'm going to tell you this. Statistically proven, one of the number one reasons contractors fail today is what? The number one, one of the number one reasons today a contractor fails is because they don't know how to price out a job. One of the other top reasons today in America today is why does a contractor fail? Because they don't pay their fucking taxes. Ain't that fucking crazy? Ain't that fucking crazy?
Pay your taxes and know. So how do you go about, like, that is also an enormous skill, learning how to offer a bid. And a bid that's not just covering your costs, but that's giving you profitability so you can stay in business and go on to the next job.
Yeah, presentation. It's all in the presentation, right? So, you know, for you people that are in the public sector, you know, when you're in the government or in the public sector, it's a little bit different because you're blinded, right? You're blinded to putting in your bid in the public. But there's relationship building. There's relationship building that you can build, that some of these people ain't just going with the cheapest contract. They're going with the middle contractor, right?
Yeah.
So if you're dealing with what we call residential public contract, it's presentation, knowing your customer, listening to them. You know, one of the hardest things today is that, and let me back up here for a second. Some of us, not all of us, but some of us are gifted by having two ears and being able to hear. But one of the hardest fucking thing is listening.
Listening.
Right? Listening. Right? So when you sit there and you listen to what your client is telling you, what they need, and you're actually giving them back that information, they're going to love you. But if you're trying to, you know, different bullshit, that means you didn't pay attention. And these people are going to know this person didn't hear me out. Like, don't get me started, man.
I'm coaching my daughter's 6-year-old softball team. Yeah. And she's athletically gifted. She's phenomenal. And we've literally had that conversation a few times in the past week or so about the difference between listening and hearing, right? Mm-hmm. I tell her all the time, like, you have two ears, I have a voice, there is sound being created and you are hearing it. I get that. But if for me to understand that you are listening, you need to be able to, you know, either say it back to me or make that change or do whatever it is. We've had that conversation a few times, but that's so funny that you bring that up because it's so true, right?
It is true.
I mean, everybody hears people, but to actually show and be able listen. to listen and what am I trying to say? Like, show that you actually listen, right? Prove that you listen to them.
The biggest part.
Yep.
It is. And that's also a skill that is learned. And when you're in our industry, you know, and you're in sales and you're in service, it's almost repeating back to the conversation, what you're hearing. What I'm hearing is that's one of my sales skills. And I even do it here in our podcast.
Yeah, I was going to say you do it a lot.
Mario,
I love it.
What I'm hearing is that you do X. And repeating that back to the client in a way that, oh, yeah, you're right. You get me. You understand what I want and what I envision for this space. It's listening. It is listening.
Yeah, all you're doing there is mirroring the customer. Mirror the customer, repeat what they're saying, and they're going to love you.
Yes.
Right? They're going to love you. Right? So the art contracting, we got to love it. Well, you're dealing with different personalities out there, right? You're dealing with different people, right?
So Mario, I'm talking about client relations. I think it's amazing that you're servicing 10,000 homes in a year. Mm-hmm. You're meeting 14,000 people. What does that outfit look like to have a sales team now? You were the guy on the phone. You were the guy leaving the wires and the light fixtures. What does that outfit look like? How do you scale into that?
You know, we convert our own service technicians, our own physical electricians, how to do presentations, and they become our salespeople.
Who's picking up the phone at your office?
Our CSRs. We have 17 CSRs.
You have 17 CSRs. 17.
Wow. We have 17 CSRs and 5 dispatchers and one director of dispatching. So 6 people in our dispatch.
Wow.
Let me see that is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's been a great road trip.
Then you see that.
I'm still on the road trip. There's nothing.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
You're still going.
I'm still on the fucking road trip, right? So.
You're still going. That's a big outfit. How much, where do you see yourself? Do you feel like you've arrived? And please, I understand that you never really feel like you've arrived, but do you feel like you are in a place now where estás a gusto? Like, I feel good here. Or do we need to grow more?
No, we need to grow up. You know, people ask me, are you content? Are you content? I'm like, once you start to be, once you get the itch to becoming rich, it's different, right? So there's a lot of entrepreneurs that I know out there that they're content. I have a good friend of mine that says, hey, once you get to the $10 million mark and your margins are good, you know, keep it there, man. You know, now he's 150 million, right? So he was giving me advice.
He was serving you a load of crap there, huh?
Yeah. This advice was given to me like, I don't know, fucking 6 years ago, right? But no, for us, it's the growth, right? For us, it's, you know, passing that $10 million mark, you know, was a hurdle, right? It was tough. Once we passed it, then we continue on and we say, okay, the next one is the 15, past that. Now what's the next goal, right? So it's just consistent growth, right? Consistent growth is not being content, making sure that you train your people, right? What is that guy from Virgin Airlines, Richard Branson?
Yeah, Branson. You know, he's
preacher people, whatever that saying goes, right? I don't know exactly how that saying goes, but we do that here where we train them, we treat them well enough. We train them enough to where they can go start their own business, but we treat them so well that why would they want to go start their own business, right? They say, you know, I just prefer to stay here, right?
Yeah. So where's the grit and the drive and all that come from? I mean, it in the past you said it came from hitting rock bottom, right? Being
incarcerated,
being at that rock bottom, right? And look, I kind of wanted to go back on that just for a second, and not that we need to talk about it, but I feel like a lot of people think that they've been on bottom, but unless you actually find the inner motivation to push like hell and go forward, probably haven't been to the bottom. You haven't been uncomfortable enough. But anyway, where does that grit and that drive come from now? Right. I mean, because
it's a disappear from not wanting to go anymore. Back there. Yeah. That's a great question. Like you're years removed from that person.
You know, how can I answer this question? Is where does this energy come from? It comes from seeing other families being able to prosper as much as I have.
Yeah.
You know, seeing my staff and getting a text message when they bought their first new car because they've never owned one.
It's giving.
Getting a text message that they're in escrow, right? Yeah. That is the best fucking feeling.
Yeah.
Right? So that drive comes from every morning waking up and being grateful to the Lord Jesus Christ. That's my savior. I'm not preaching to you as I'm telling you who's my savior.
Amen.
You know, and being able to make sure that I am here to support, you know, my staff.
Yeah.
You know, we have financial advisors that come in. I mean, we really try to teach these people how to actually better their life financially and mentally, right?
Yeah.
Because it all starts with this. Because without this, and I'm pointing to my head to make sure that everybody understands, without focus, without understanding, without a roadmap in your life, you ain't gonna know where the fuck you're going.
Yeah. I heard a very powerful saying, Mario, that there's the saying is that money doesn't buy you happiness. And somebody said, it's because you haven't given enough.
Yeah.
It's because you have, money doesn't buy happiness. But if you haven't given enough, then you clearly don't understand how money can.
You know, I have a really good friend of mine, entrepreneur, Victor Garcia. He says, I told him that. I said, hey, money doesn't buy happiness. He says, fucking bullshit. Take your kid to Disneyland and tell me that fucker ain't gonna have a college degree. I said, fuck, I guess you're right, bro. Right? I guess you're right.
You haven't given enough. You haven't. But that's what I'm hearing, Mario, is that the pulse that you have now is that the boy of the fear of being broke is the boy from the past, right? But
yeah,
now, now what energizes you is your giving, is you wanting to put your people in a position to be successful and to achieve. And that's being of a service. You're being of service.
I just got a text message from one of our techs yesterday. We use a platform that it's for text messaging. And a 21-year-old kid, been with us for 2 years. finally moved out of his parents' house, but he didn't buy a house, but he was so excited that he got approved for his own apartment. Mm-hmm. Right. So now the next level is for him to own a house. Mm-hmm. Right. Here's a 21-year-old young man last year. Well, he turned 21. He's going on 22 this year. Last year, his take home pay after taxes was $102,000. What does a 21-year-old do with $102,000?
He gets his own place.
Right. Right.
So he moves out of his mom's. Place. He stops sleeping on his mom's couch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, he's also first generation Mexican American, you know, and he was tired of sleeping on the sofa in the living room, you know, and that's another story that I can get into, but you know, that's more of a private story, but
I'm going to start stalking you, following you. I'm going to start showing up at your office. Yeah. I just want to sit down and have coffee with you.
You know, we could chill. You know, I'm not a Facebook guy. You know, I don't go on Facebook. I don't rave. I don't pound my chest on Facebook or LinkedIn or anything. I'm just a regular old dude that if you want to come and chill with me and have lunch, man, call me, text me. You know, knowledge is power only if you apply it and share it with others.
Only if you apply it and you share it with others.
Mm-hmm. Think it about doesn't that. Mean knowledge is nothing if you keep it to yourself.
Word.
Knowledge is only power if you apply it and you share it with others and you can help them in their journey. Word. Because again, being an entrepreneur is not easy. You know, we make mistakes throughout the journey of being an entrepreneur, but it can all be corrected if you hang around with the right people.
Mario, right,
if you ask questions.
That's a good segue into this other segment, Mike.
We're gonna
go into this rapid fire segment, and this is the only scripted part of our podcast, Mario. It's the question that I ask every one of our guests, and because we want this to be a resource for others who are listening, who are watching, who are in our industry, I ask the same four questions that will perhaps incentivize them or have them think about what they're doing differently. It's four really basic questions. The first question, Mario, what's one resource that your business cannot do without? Is there something that
marketing.
What in marketing?
What do you use?
What are you using? What are you doing?
Everything that you can think of, right? So we do, we're still in the phone books, we're in magazines, we're in local services.
You're still in the phone book?
Yeah.
That exists?
Yeah, we're still at. Yeah, it still exists here in LA. We're still in 103 books out here in LA, wow. 113 books. We're very heavy on PPC ads. For you guys that don't know what PPC is, it's pay-per-click.
Pay-per-click ads, yep. You're doing
it. We're on Google local service ads, which is the three top things now that Google has. We do very heavy on search engine optimization, you know, AKA SEO.
Lots of SEOs.
A lot of social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok.
You're doing all of the marketing.
Yeah,
you're heavy.
Correct.
I mean, with 14,000 clients that you're having, or 14,000 homes, that's a lot.
Yeah. What? So next level, are you tracking all that stuff? Do you know?
We track every single marketing piece. We own 298 phone numbers. And we track every single marketing. We track, the phone numbers that's on the trucks. We track phone numbers that are on the business cards.
So that's how you do it. You put it based on a phone number. So you got a different number of TikTok, a different phone number on Instagram, everything. A different number of the phone books. And all. Okay.
Everything.
God, I love that. I freaking love that.
Mario has 298 phone numbers.
Yeah. I love somebody's actually applying themselves and doing marketing correctly, right?
Listen, if you don't know your KPIs, you know, KPIs,
key performance indicators.
Performance indicators.
Yep.
You're not going to know. There's KPIs for everything. I have KPIs for my CSRs, KPI for dispatchers, KPI for management. I have KPIs
for accounting. Yep.
You know, so yeah.
Right.
So you have to make sure you have tracking phone numbers to make sure.
Time to level up, contractors.
Listen to Mario. Yep. This is amazing. So marketing and doing marketing, not just one, but you're multiple pronged.
You have your hands in everything. You got to diversify your portfolio for sure, 100%.
Mario, before I go to the next one, part of your networking is also the organizations. You said you're part of three organizations that share best practices. Do you mind sharing what those are in case other contractors are interested in that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm a member of Nexstar. I've been a member of Nexstar since 2007. Service Roundtable, been a member with them since like 2008. And then the Service Profit Group, I've been a member since they founded about 3 years ago. So you guys again, it's Nexstar, Service Roundtable, and
the Service Profit Group,
yeah.
If you guys are listening to this podcast, go back 15 seconds and write those down. Get involved, get linked in with other people who are doing what you're doing and doing it right. Second question, Mario, what's the best advice someone has given you that you draw from today? Best advice?
Always know your numbers.
Always know your numbers.
Yeah, always know your numbers. So we look at our P&L. We look at our P&L, our balance sheet, our cash management report, and our cash flow and forecasting every Monday mornings, 10 a.m.
It's a set meeting every 10 a.m.
It's a religious practice.
Every Monday mornings.
It's on the calendar.
Trying to see where we're at, where we're bleeding, if we're bleeding, if we're not. You know, you can stop the hemorrhaging when you get your P&Ls, right? So we do a P&L on cash and we do a P&L on accrual. So, you know, we compare, we look, you know, on cash, it's like a checkbook. If people don't know what that cash P&L is, but it's like a checkbook, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever you're writing out, your accrual is actually what you're generating that month in revenue and what you're spending in that month.
So for anyone else listening out there, depending on your scale and the size, like you might have to have it a once a week activity. For those who aren't taking 14,000, 10,000 clients in a year, you know, just put it on a calendar. Just make it reflect. Just do it.
Maybe not as on demand, but yeah.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be on demand. I mean, if I was a contractor today and I was running a 2-shop, 3-shop truck operation, you know, I'd make sure I look at my P&L at least the first to second week of the month of what I did the previous month.
Yes.
For sure, 100%.
100%.
I wouldn't want to wait 6 months to see, you know, if I'm losing money or making money.
Yep.
For sure.
Make any sense.
Third question. Is there a book or a podcast that you love? Book or podcast that you love?
You know, I look up to other service contractors that are out there, you know, Ken Goodrich, The Point podcast. You have Ishmael Valdez from NextGen. Ken Goodrich is from Gettle. You know, you actually have Victor Rancor from Absolute. Airflow has got some good podcasts out there. I recommend you guys listen to these guys. These guys are on fire. Mm. They give some great content. You know, they're just great people, right? So good people.
I'm making notes, Mario. And the last question. You are many things for many people. You have a big outfit. You're a husband. You're a father. But is there one habit that you have that you pour into that gives you life so that you can then pour into others and be all the things that you are? Is there a habit that you have?
Pray, right? So I'm very spiritual. I cut like a sailor, but I got my own personal relationship with God.
Amen.
You asked me what my hobby was. I love to golf and I love to own classic cars. I finally was able to own, I have 7 classic cars from 1954 convertible classic cars. I like the lowrider community. That's how I grew up.
What's your car? The Impala? What is it?
Yeah, they're all Impalas, you know, every single one of them.
I don't know
why
I knew that, but I just knew it.
They're all Impalas. Favorite one is the 61 convertible that I have. So it's my favorite.
Is that the red one that's on your Instagram?
No, that's a 64.
Okay.
My 61 is called Sexy Blue.
Sexy Blue.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be previewed at Cinco de Mayo. May 5th, super lowrider car show at the lowrider car show in Long Beach this 2023.
You have 7 That's Impala? Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
And they're all car shows. You know what? In other words, I still drive them, but they're car show quality.
Damn.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So fun.
So,
the habit that you have is outside of collecting Impalas and golfing is praying.
Yeah, brain. I have a routine in the morning. My routine in the morning is to take 5 minutes to myself and be grateful and understand where I'm at and take care of my health. Now, I am a big guy, but believe it or not, this big guy 3 months ago was up to running 13 miles a day. Right. So took a toll on my knees. So what do I do now? I swim. Damn. So I have a routine. I got to swim. You catch me in my pool. Yeah, I'm a little spoiled. My pool set at 90 degrees. And I swim every morning. I'll swim for about a good 40 minutes, you know, lap after lap. My pool is 42 feet long, so it's good enough.
You did it.
Wow.
Mario, that's awesome, like, man. This, you pray, you work out, you collect impalas. Dude.
You know, sometimes in order for me to understand that this is actually my life, I have to sit back and actually look at where I've come from. Sometimes I'll park in front of my house, and we're building a really huge house right now, 6,000 square feet, 6 master bedrooms.
Wow.
I have to park.
Where do you find land like that in Southern California? Where do you find
the land? I'm in the city of Downey.
Yes.
They call it Mexican Beverly Hills.
They call that. So. I was going to say, what they do. That is a legit thing. When I got with my husband, who's from Huntington Park, he said, I was like, I'm from Central California. He's like, where would we live? He's like, oh, you go to Downey. That's where all the
Mexican Beverly Hills is.
Yeah. You go to Downey, drove me through Beverly. He's like, isn't it so nice here? But there's big houses in Downey. Yeah. There's really nice communities in Downey.
Yeah. So I own one of the biggest lots in that city. It's like half an acre in the city.
Shit.
And you can travel within a 2 mile zone and find every single thing you can think of. It's just a great community.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, you know, I have to park sometimes outside and say, shit, you know, I come from being a bad guy to having this, man, I'm blessed.
Amen.
Blessed.
Amen. Blessed. Mario, you blessed me with this conversation. It was
an absolute
privilege.
So fun.
To get to meet you, to get to talk to you. I will be stalking you down and showing up at your office at some point in the near future, because you are a blessing.
Everybody's welcome to come and visit me. Our doors are open to contractors.
And I know you have a back door, so I'm going to sneak in through the back. Be like,
I can tell people, everybody's welcome. Come and join me. Come and chill. You know, we have music in our hallway because I don't like silence.
No, me too.
So we have music going.
We gotta get out on the golf course too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a terrible game on Saturday, man. I never throw my clubs, and I threw my club that day. It was fine.
It'll do that to you. It'll do that to you for sure.
Thank you,
Mario. Before we let you go, let's give you an opportunity to let people know where to find you. You probably need another phone number for us, so that you know that it's coming from the podcast, right?
I have to track it. Kidding. No, but everybody, you know, just, for you guys that want to send me a text message, or, you know, I really don't answer my cell phone if I don't have you saved on my cell phone. So don't be offended by it. Send me a text message. My cell phone is 323-353-0067. Man, listen, I'm an open fucking book, bro. I got nothing to hide. I try to help people, right?
I love it.
So feel free to send me a text message. I'm cool with that. I don't answer the phone on numbers I don't have saved. Send me a text message. If you need help on something or you're questioning something in your business, listen, I'll give it my best shot to give you an answer. But if I don't have the answer for you, I'll fucking help you get it.
Love that.
Dude.
Love that.
Arriba. All right, guys.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you, Mario.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mario. I appreciate it today.
You lit it up.
I appreciate
you lit it up. Felicidades. Adelante.
Thank you. All right.
Stay safe out there, brother. Have a good one.
All right. Peace out. See ya. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you had a good time, be sure to hit that subscribe button to get all the latest episodes. And if you had a really good time, leave a review to let us know what you thought. Until then, go gather some crazy stories on your job sites, and we'll see you next time on So You Want to Be a Contractor.